Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm here with Tom and Melissa Gould and Fran Ginsberg. And tonight's topic is actually part two of what we started last month, afterlife and grief words and phrases. Basically, we're talking about words and phrases that might mean something different to us now than they did before, or words and phrases that perhaps the mainstream public would think of differently. And also some of the things that people say about grief and we can that may or may not be helpful. So tonight's show is sponsored by Comlock, and they can be found on the web at Comlock, K-A-M-L-A-K.com. And if you'd like to join in tonight and have something to add to the discussion, the number here is 1-888-627-6008. We have a bunch of exciting things on the horizon, so Fran will bring us up to date.
Oh, yes. Coming up free this month of February, we have our Visionary Explorers group that meets online, and they're going to meet February 8th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That would be 11 to noon Pacific, and anything in between and on the sides that you'd like to calculate, because it's online. Also in February, on February 11th, from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m., the Cold Spring Harbor Afterlife Discussion Group will meet at the Cold Spring Harbor Library in New York. Our annual Summer Grief Transformation Retreat Weekend, Love Knows No Death, is scheduled for July 10th or 12th, so mark your calendars, and plan to take part in a phenomenal experience where you will learn that the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway to another chapter of continuing life. Watch your emails and our website for member-only super early bird registration at below-cost rates, and hopefully that might even be up on the website tomorrow. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle, though, is up on the website. You can be one of five winners of our medium readings with certified mediums Renee Buck, Neil Zapowski, Eliza Ray, Catherine Nadal, and Tracy Lee Nash. And of course, that drawing will take place on Earth Day, April 22nd, and it's only $5 to enter. Our webinar schedule begins on February 23rd with Dr. Stafford Betty presenting When Did You Ever Become Less by Dying? This webinar is scheduled for a Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 10 a.m. Pacific, and we've corrected it to 6 p.m. in the UK. So by moving one of our webinars to Sunday, we're going to see if we can appeal to a wider range of our members who might really enjoy tuning into these things. But because of the time slots that we have been choosing, they're sleeping or doing something else while ours is going on. So we're going to experiment, and we hope that everybody in those other time zones are able to tune in so we can continue to do this. So, but we want to make sure that when you sign up for our webinars, you read and follow the registration instructions on our website that will ensure that you have the proper links to join when the webinar goes live. And for our listeners tonight, here are some codes to the webinar you might enjoy. Our members can use the code BETTY2020 to grab one of our limited member-only free seats. And our non-members who are listening, please use STAFFORD, STAFFORD 2020, to secure a half-price non-member seat. And we hope to see everybody at this great webinar. And please help keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
All right. And as I mentioned before we went through the announcements, tonight's show, we're going to be talking about words and phrases that mean different things to different people. For example, if you were to say to me the phrase out of body, you know, way back, I don't know that I really know what you were talking about. You know, I might think, okay, yeah, some people have dreams where they're flying. Maybe that would come to being. But out of body means something totally different to me now. What about?
I think when, at least when we were kids, if we would say out of body, it was just referring to, you know, a different state of mind. There was no real research or anything anybody was reading about out of body. It was more of a slang kind of a term that we throw out there.
Any thoughts from you guys on that term?
Well, of course, I do remember the studies that the military did with remote viewing. And to me, if somebody said out of body, I would figure that, well, somebody was doing a remote viewing because you go out of your body and see something miles away.
Right. And when you think about it, most of the stuff that we talk about constantly is out of body. You know, it's not from within. We're talking about, you know, mediumship, right? Your mind is going out of your body, and as Tom mentioned, remote viewing and the near-death experiences. People are leaving their body. So, you know, but not having known about that, I mean, if you walked up to a lot of people now and your friends in the mainstream, so to speak, I mean, they might look at you, you know, and think of out of body as a totally different term. I mean, a lot of these things, like distant healing. If you said to me, what was distant healing, I'd look at you cross-eyed, right? And we know now, you know, distant healing is a phenomenon where people can send their consciousness to affect, you know, physical matter, which would be somebody's a physical body. So, you know, if Melissa was sick and I can, if I had that ability, I can extend my mind to Melissa and think of her healing light, and studies have shown remarkable success, you know, in doing things like that. So, and I know, for instance, Melissa, I mean, you were open to all these things before, but did that ever come up, healing in your household? Like, was that, is that something that you would consider?
No, actually, I can't recall that coming up. But back to just using that expression out of body and thinking about some, you know, factual stories, well, factual, purportedly factual stories about mediums or psychics who are helping solve a crime and they're able to put themselves in the crime scene. I remember reading things like, okay, now, you know, maybe they've gone into some kind of other zone of thinking, but it's like, okay, now you're on the doorstep. Turn around and tell us what the house number is. Would that be similar to out of body? Because they aren't there and they never were there, but
sure,
they're putting themselves there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, I think that's exactly what Tom was talking about with remote viewing.
Yeah.
And I think all these terms that we use are entangled. They, you know, we everybody's studying different things, discovering different things, and then they keep tagging names onto them. And sometimes the names themselves are not great great names.
Yeah.
So we stumble our way through it. Sometimes even some of the researchers are picking words that have been used to mean something else.
Right.
And so that creates the confusion that we have today.
So how about the term end-of-life experience? So if I went to most of my friends and I said, you know, can you tell me about an end-of-life experience? They would probably say, you know, lying in a hospital bed and suffering, you know, that to them would be an end of life experience. But to us, I mean, we know that people have these you know, these deathbed visions and these visitations and these sudden awakening moments. And so to us and to a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, end-of-life experiences mean something totally different, you know, than to a lot of people. We don't get into a discussion too much about evil, because evil, I think, has a religious connotation to it. A lot of people think of, you know, good and evil, heaven and hell, that kind of stuff. But, you know, there are some people that are evil because they just have negative thoughts. I mean, do you guys think that people are born evil, or like, you know, just born with negative energy? Or is that something that they become indoctrinated to based on life experience?
You know, I never subscribe to evil, and I know it seems to come up a lot. And I had a friend who had me come over to her house to sage her whole house to get rid of evil. And I didn't believe in evil, but I did what she asked because I felt it would help her feel better about her home. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, it's a complicated question because, I don't think that there are evil entities necessarily. You'll see in Hollywood movies and that, but I do think, as Melissa said, there are negative thoughts and intent, and that is perceived as evil. And Fran asking, do you think anybody's born evil? My initial reaction is no, everybody's born pure and good. But of course, if you were evil, or as what is perceived as evil, had negative thoughts and negative intentions towards other people, a lack of love is more the appropriate, and then you pass over, you're dealt with differently than people who were filled with love and lived a loving existence. And of course, some people, souls, have to come back to learn or try to better themselves from what they were in the past. So perhaps, I mean, you're born with a history of negative activity and negative thoughts, and you're born with that, and you're trying to learn your way out of it. So it's that's pretty much a convoluted roundabout thing. Wait a minute. Yeah.
But we could do a whole show on that.
Well, wait. So if I'm following Tom, so we're talking about from previous lives, bringing that back in as something you need to work on in this life.
Yeah.
So that's one way. And I think, and Melissa's got the other view there, because I have both views, is that we create our own reality. So if you're going to believe in fear and negative things and hate and stuff like that, that's what you're creating around yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you've created something that didn't exist before. So does evil exist? Only if you create it. That's my...
All right. We're going to, on that note, we're going to go to a quick break. A lot more, have a whole list of things here to
Good.
Get to. So we'll take a quick one, be back in a few minutes, so stay with us.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death, and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's KAMLAK.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love Knows No Death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering. We are talking about afterlife terms and phrases. We'll also talk a little bit about things people say about grief. If you wanted to call us and discuss any of these terms, it's 1-888-627-6008. You know, I'm looking through the list, just simple things like we refer to people now as discarnates. I would never have known what a discarnate is unless I tried to break down the word and figure it out, you know, using English reasoning. But, you know, so we know a discarnate is somebody that's no longer incarnate in a body. So when we talk about dead people, we call them discarnates. But not a lot of other people do.
Would they call them ghosts? Or is that only, I mean, because I have a feeling we could be talking about ghosts, but that is a whole bunch of other things also. Like, right. Does that mean you can see the dead person? Or you just sense there's a presence in the room? Does ghost always mean something you can see or put your hand through?
Well, yeah, I mean, and of course, the theory is that a ghost is a discarnate who came back to visit. You know, so you know, another example of a good term that you brought it up. People talk about ghosts all the time, but they talk about ghosts mainly in a fearful way. You know, fueled by the media. So just what you said, Melissa. You know, so a ghost is a visitation from a discarnate, somebody that's no longer in the physical. Why is that fearful? You know, they're not hurting anybody. They're coming to say hello, you know. But what about, do you know, I didn't know until very recently, do you know what a death doula is?
Oh, I think I do. I mean, a regular doula helps to birth babies into the world. So a death doula, I'm assuming, helps people cross over to the other side.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, you know, hospice is
right.
growing because of people like us, the baby boomers that are coming of age, you know, so, you know, just there's more of us and more of us that, you know, are reaching that age where we're crossing over. And there's this burgeoning, I don't want to call it an industry, but a need for these, exactly the way you defined it, people that help people cross over. Because a lot of people are fearful at the end, mm-hmm. Unless they're comforted by having a vision or, you know, where they see their loved ones, which happens a lot. And also, a lot of the relatives are fearful that their loved one is going to pass when nobody's around, like they can't be there all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they want to make sure that somebody's with them when the time comes. So it's, you know, I'm just reading a book now about it, but it's a term that I never would have known. You know, every day you learn something new. But
it's interesting about that. That it's kind of the catch-22 when you say that people want to be there for their loved ones when they pass, and then you, I've heard many medium readings where the spirit comes back and said, "I was waiting for you to get out of the room so I could be there." So, and another question.
You do hear that story a lot where the person says, "Well, I just went to the bathroom and I was gone for 3 minutes, and that's when they chose to cross over." Well, yeah, they chose because they didn't want you in the room
right.
while this was going on. So, yeah, Tom's right. It's
yeah.
common.
Oh,
very common.
Definitely. I mean,
was Ted Bundy a doula, a death doula?
Yeah.
Just curious.
Wait, we'll get him on the phone.
Oh, yeah. You make him help.
He helps you cross.
So, Dr.
Gavorkian.
Not in a very spiritual way.
But he's there when yeah. they're crossing.
How about Akashic Records?
Mm. Oh, well, there you go.
If you asked me about what the Akashic Records were, you know, 20 years ago, I would have said it was like maybe it was a Beatle label, you know. Or, but the Akashic Records, a lot of people have heard of it.
More spiritual people have.
Yeah. And the theory is that there's this database of everything that ever happened, is happening, and will happen, is stored in this etheric information sphere, and that people can pull information out of it at any time. It's not so far-fetched, because a lot of scientists talk about these different terms, you know, zero energy field, information fields.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the arguments that people use against mediumship. And they say, a medium's not really talking to the dead. Mm-hmm. You know, they're pulling information out of this data field. To me, that's even more amazing. But
I had chosen to use that term in the picture book I wrote. When I decided to self-publish, I knew I didn't have to please anybody but myself, so I decided I'm going to use that terminology. And I did. And I also then had a bookmark printed up to explain my interpretation of the Akashic Record, you know, that our thoughts and actions all have energy, and the energy goes out into the universe. And I didn't get into, you know, when you pass and you have your life review, but I would assume it's along those lines, where those actions and everything that you did and how you treated others now had, you know, some ramifications on how you view your life. But before I gave a copy of my book to one of the preschools that I was working in, which was a Christian-based preschool, I thought I ought to look up, you know, if Akashic Records are mentioned in the Bible. And with a Google search, you can find those things out really quickly. And I believe it was mentioned in the Bible, and right now I can't recall how it was stated, but apparently Christian religions frown upon that terminology, that things are being stored in the universe, because God has all the information, and you should not assume there's any other energy fields collecting information when it's God who has all the answers. So that, you know, puts a different spin on it, and I don't know how popular that thought is, or if many people have ever even heard of that. But I had to keep that in the back of my mind when I started to take some of the bookmarks out of the book. So let them go do their own Google search if they wanted to.
Right. And that book is Dream Job, right?
Right.
Dream Job.
Okay. That's right. Thank you.
How about Silver Cord?
Silver. I still don't know what that is.
I do recall that one too. In a story I read, that connection that if you do, what I recall clearly was a woman's encounter of the afterlife, going on a journey with her brother, and it sounded like dream visits. But he came to her and took her to the other side with her. But there was always the silver cord attached to her. He didn't have one, but she did. So yes. She then had to return to her body. But is that this similar to what you were thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, people refer to the silver cord that we all have that connects our physical body to our soul body or our etheric body, you know, like our body double. And that's the connection between the physical and the spiritual. And some people do report when they're with their loved one that's passing, actually see the silver cord break. So when your soul releases this connection, sort of like an umbilical cord, breaks. And when it breaks, you're free of the physical body, and that's when your consciousness moves on. And, you know, and people report seeing this, you know, but that's written about a lot in the metaphysical world. So it's an interesting concept. Makes sense when you think about it.
I know.
Yeah.
We have a cord when we're born. Why shouldn't we have one that we release and cut when we leave, you know?
Yep.
We read a lot about science now, you know, I don't think any of us really read a lot about it before. So the terms keep coming up, you know, empirical versus anecdotal.
Yeah.
So, and people tend to discount anything that's not empirical, meaning anything that can't be studied and replicated in a laboratory where you have the tangible physical evidence. That's the only thing, you know, a lot of people in the scientific world, you know, trust. But we know from what we talk about all the time is that anecdotal evidence, which is not in a laboratory, but yet it happens and over and over and over again to millions and millions and millions of people, has to carry some weight. So you can't discount that. So a lot of the things that we talk about are anecdotal, but I don't think they should be dismissed. I mean, I'm sure you don't either.
So, I know. It's still considered data.
Yeah.
So data is data.
Because the point of, what we want for Forever Family Foundation is to prove empirically that the afterlife does exist, but that's so difficult. But with this anecdotal, if enough people keep their records and share them with others, you know, shouldn't that be enough?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you have the numbers, you know, and the similarities, you know, between the two. Automatic writing. I would just think of a typewriter that types by itself with those old, you know, automatic writing.
With artificial intelligence, you can have that.
Yeah, writing. Automatic writing. You know, that's right. With artificial intelligence, we probably can telepathically make the typewriter or the keyboard, you know, move. But anybody want to explain what automatic writing is?
I was told that I should try it by a medium. I have not, I don't really have the discipline that is necessary for these things, but I'm curious. But basically what it is you pick up a pen, you put your pen down on a piece of paper, and invite spirit, or if spirit's in you, your hand starts moving without you doing it. And then whatever comes out is a message from somewhere else.
I think I heard use your non-dominant hand.
Well, that might work.
I heard that suggestion. I've heard so many different variations on this, even ones where people say you write down what comes into your mind. So is that allowing spirit to take over your pen and then it really is automatic writing, or it's you receiving some information and then writing it down? So that, you know, the waters get a little murky.
That's always, the argument against it. And Tom was exactly right the way you described the process. But so the argument is that it's still coming from the conscious mind of the writer, as opposed to, channeling, the other side. But there are, I've read cases of automatic writing, and the name escapes me of which medium did it, but the medium would hold a pen in each hand and a pad, separated, and write simultaneously in clearly legible fashion what's been dictated. That's impressive.
Right, but I think even what Melissa says, if it's your non-dominant hand, you clearly can't control the writing. And yet if it comes out legible, then the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
I was writing on my pad of paper here the word channeling, right as it came out of your mouth, channeling. And that's another word, terminology, channeling.
Yeah.
Channeling, yeah. What is that? I mean, we know, but...
Yeah, and I think when people talk about channeling, it's more of giving up your body and your conscious mind to be a vessel, so you're channeling. And now, like in Seth Speaks, right, that's an example of channeling, where you're just basically a vessel by which somebody in spirit is getting a message across, right?
But I want to go to the Seth Speaks stuff, because I think that is so evidential when you consider, and I know Tom's read the Seth materials, I've read the Seth materials, the information that you get when you're reading that is not something that you would just pull out of someplace. He goes into these elaborate descriptions of things, and then when he's done, he says, well, but you wouldn't understand it. Let me explain it again in another way that you would. And then the first way that he explained it all of a sudden makes sense. So that's so, to me anyway, that is so evidential that it was actually channeled information, because Who would think to even try to do something like that, let alone accomplish it?
Yeah. We promised that we'd talk about some of these common things that people say to those who are grieving the loss of a loved one. And some of the things, I could see the point of why people would say it, but, it may be interpreted differently. But there's a lot of common phrases. Like if somebody's in grief and you say to them, well, look at what you have to be thankful for. That's a common thing. But I would take that as, I'm not thankful for, at that moment, you're not thankful for anything, right? It's maybe that's true. It's an example of a statement that's true. You really do have things to be thankful for, but that's not the frame of mind. No. You agree, Melissa?
Right. I mean, my mom recently passed. She was 96 years old. So that was, the words that people would say to me versus somebody, a young person who has just lost their mother, that would be completely different. And I know that's one of the biggest things we encounter, where you want to give comfort to those who are grieving, and it's just really, really hard to find the right words. That's something I wanted to explore more at one of our grief retreats. Collect the things that were said to people that were helpful or that did make them feel good, right, because right. Mostly it's things that don't really, they, it almost makes them feel worse.
Yeah. Well, there's more of those we'll talk about. We'll get in our second break now. When we come back, we'll pick up where we left off. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. And we left off talking about things that people say to those that are in grief that could be taken different ways. A pretty simple one that people usually come up and they say, how are you doing? My answer would have been, how the blank do you think I'm doing? and it's a perfectly harmless, well-intentioned thing. People may be genuinely, concerned with how I'm doing. So it depends on how you take it. People would take it that people would see that as some people would see that as a positive thing.
Yeah, but then there's always, the on the the part of the bereaved person not to want to make somebody else feel badly, so they would give the canned answer, oh, I'm fine, when they're not fine.
Yeah, yeah. The other one that comes up, which could go both ways too, is that people want to comfort you, so they say, well, they're in a better place.
Uh-huh.
Which we believe to be true.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it depends on the timing, really. What if you believe that death is death and it's final? That's not of any comfort to you, you know?
Oh, yeah. Sure. I know. I mean, we're a unique bunch that see things with a lot more possibilities and, you know, it is a better place as far as we can tell, but yeah. A lot of people don't believe that.
Right, but I think that's one of the goals of what we're teaching, is to show that consistently that's the kind of information that we're collecting. It is a better place, and it is a wonderful place. But you're talking about people who have not been exposed to this.
Right.
So that's not something they can wrap their head around.
Mm. How about, I'm sorry, Tom.
People who believe it, who don't believe in what we do, but believe in heaven and hell, and if you say a better place, oh, they're in heaven, thank you. You know, but I agree with you that it's a minor salve, if any.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing that comes up too is you're handling it better than I expected.
Wow, that almost is a put down. You know, like you don't look that broken up about
it. Yeah, well, I guess you don't look too upset.
My mom recalled, she would share this story. It must have had an impact on her because her dad had died when she was 13, and it was tragic, like a hit and run while he was walking home from work.
Oh.
And her mother had a couple, you know, family friends come over to the house to be with her. And the couple said to my mom, don't you know your father's dead? Why aren't you crying?
Wow.
My mom was never a crier all the time we knew her.
No.
But she brought up that story to me several times over the past 5 years. So, you know, it must have had an impact on her. It must have hurt her feelings. And sorry, I'm not crying. You know, of course, she adored her father. But she just wasn't a crier. So,
also, children especially are in shock when something totally unexpected happens. That they can't even process it.
Yeah.
Right. So to say you're handling it better than I thought, I mean, it's like, well, and they might say, if I were you, I'd be a wreck right now. Well, inside they are a wreck, but they're probably holding it together just to be able to face the world.
I mean, that goes hand in hand with the people who say, well, it's been 6 months or it's been a year. You should be moving on by now.
Right. You hear that a lot, too.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people, I think, also make a mistake by saying things like, I know how you feel, because you can't know how they feel. You know, even if you had a similar loss to what they had, meaning a parent or a sibling or a child, it's still, as you know, I mean, grief is so different for everybody, so it's not a wise thing to say.
If you simply say, I can't imagine how you must be feeling, is that all right, or does that have any bad?
That would be more palatable to me, you know, I could not understand how, you know.
Yeah.
That's a true statement.
And by the way, you're engaging the person in a conversation that shows that you have some compassion. And I think that, unfortunately, because we live in a culture that has created all this fear around death, that people tend to move away from people when death is part of the conversation or somebody's dealing with someone who's died. They'd rather remain silent and say nothing. So I think, Melissa, that's an encouraging thing, because it shows that you're in the moment with the person. You're there for the person. And I think that's really what they need. They need that to know that people aren't abandoning them.
And I think people don't know what to say, and they do abandon people, because we had an attendee at one of our retreats who said her own business partners stopped talking to her when her daughter died. And it's, I mean, to me, I was like, yeah, he probably doesn't even know what to say to you. But to her, it was even more hurtful. So people should try to find kind, thoughtful, if they can, but always say something.
Yeah, you really should. Ignoring it is probably the worst, one of the worst things you can do. I mean, when you talk about what people say, what people don't say is can be hurtful. I know many of the attendees over the years at our grief retreat will mention that, you know, I have a party and my loved one is not there for the first time, and nobody's saying anything, and it's like, but you know, I want them to say something. So I like what Melissa said, that, you know, like, you know, sorry for what you're going through, and I can't even imagine what you're going through are things that I think would be helpful.
And maybe if it's a social situation, ask them to share a story about their loved one, something that, a happy memory, maybe put it like that. Tell me a happy memory.
Yeah. And sometimes people say things that are just, you can't really even interpret it as being helpful. Because I've heard people say to somebody that's lost a spouse, saying, well, you could always remarry.
Oh,
yeah. Or I've heard people say to people who have lost a child, saying, well, you can always have more children.
Oh,
you know, that's just stupid.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the mentality of the culture that we deal with. I mean, even when a beloved pet dies, usually the parent will say, oh, we'll get another puppy on Monday.
Yeah.
No, I want that puppy. You know, it's this love connection that suddenly is not physically there anymore. And the notion that you can replace it with something else is hurtful in and of itself, I think.
Yeah. I want to go back to some of the other terms that come up a lot. We mentioned that in the last show, you know, the concept of reincarnation, you know, of coming back, reincarnating into another body and going through this life experience again. But hypnotic regression is a term that's comes up a lot of books been written about it, where people are put into a hypnotic state, brought back in time, either to their childhood or before their child, before they were born, so they could remember a past life and then, you know, give all this information, you know, and then come back. It's really an intriguing concept that most of the serious researchers today of reincarnation frown upon that as evidence, because they think that when you're in a hypnotized state, you're very susceptible to suggestion. You know, so that's why they don't think it's valid form of evidence. But you know, there have been a lot of books, you know, written, you know, but, you know, Brian Weiss and Michael Newton, you know, and about, you know, so and sometimes there's veridical information that comes through. So I don't totally discount it, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's the stories of the children who talk of their other family, and that in villages miles and miles away, and when the parents get sick of hearing about this other family and say, okay, we're going to go find this other family, and sure enough, they do find the other family, and the child knows the people, and in some cases they have birthmarks in the spot where the person was mortally wounded. Mm-hmm. So it's
right.
There's a lot of physical evidence to back up the reincarnation.
Right, and that's why the scientists prefer those kind of cases to somebody that's just been regressed, you know, because they can go out and investigate, and
right.
And like Tom said, they could pull up you know, autopsy reports and the manner of death and investigate the work records and, you know, birthmarks, as you mentioned. So that's pretty interesting also as well. There's a term that I'm going to make Melissa smile again, but you know, we never thought of ectoplasm. Because when I thought of ectoplasm, I always thought of Ghostbusters. That's the stuff that, you know, the green slimy stuff that's in the tank, you know, that kind of stuff. But I mentioned that's kind of an inside joke because we've all.
You want to get me started, don't you?
No, I won't get you started on that. But we'll just leave it at that. I mean, ectoplasm is a substance that's exuded from one of several orifices of a physical medium, and the theory is that discarnates, you know, dead people can form images out of this substance. You know, today, you know, it's very suspect in today's world of physical mediumship, but in 100 years ago, there were great physical mediums that were studied by really credible people, including Nobel Prize-winning medical doctors who were totally convinced. So it's a subject not a lot of people talk about. I mean, we were joking because collectively we saw a physical medium that we didn't believe we were really seeing ectoplasm. That's why I mentioned it.
Well, can I add to that, Bob? If you do see a physical medium, when I think we might have all been at the lecture. I can't recall the woman's name, Shelley somebody. I had inquired if this ectoplasm, because she had photographs of it coming out of different mediums, and I asked if couldn't a bit of the substance be taken for testing for DNA or some sort of test, and she said, oh no, it can't be touched. It might harm the medium. It must re-enter the body the way it came out. So if you're in the presence of a physical medium who is claiming that's what is coming out of his or her body is ectoplasm, and yet it does not return into their body, I think that's a big red flag.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true. But to your point, I do recall that, and I can't cite where I read it, but that one of the researchers did capture ectoplasm and did study it and have it broken down in a lab. And they found a lot of elements common to biology, you know, human biology in the ectoplasm. I don't remember, you know, what else, but it, you know, but there's an example. It didn't dissipate and go back to the, it was collected and brought into a laboratory, you know, and studied. So I don't know. You have to take everything with a grain of, you know, around here, we're open-minded to everything, you know, and that's another term, you know, skepticism. I never realized until we got into this, nothing wrong with being skeptical as long as you're an open-minded skeptic. I still consider myself to be an open-minded skeptic.
Absolutely.
But I never realized the destructive power of the closed-minded skepticism. We did not open to anything, and that's where there was another term I wrote down, scientism. Scientists are guilty of that too, and to a certain extent. They believe that everything can be reduced to physical matter, and if it can't be shown in a laboratory, it doesn't exist, and that's their religion. Scientism becomes their religion. So these are all things that I never thought about, I'm sure you guys never thought about, but then we banty about these terms every day now. So see how we've changed?
See how we've grown,
yeah. So I think it's almost time to wrap it up. As Fran mentioned, check the website for the upcoming webinars, and you could use those codes.
Can use those codes and watch for the super early bird specials on the grief retreat. That's going to be in Chester, July 10th through 12th.
Yeah, there's going to be a very interesting grief retreat with a lot of surprises. So
a lot of really interesting new stuff that we're working into that.
Okay.
So now we can ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
and science is going to prove it.
Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week.